vilifying and demonizing Palestinians and Muslims. The recent murder of a 6-year-old Palestinian boy by a Zionist in the US is just one example. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Crescent International Road. You Muslims must die, screamed 71-year-old Joseph M. Kazuba as he stabbed a 6-year-old Palestinian boy and his mother in Plainfield outside Chicago. The murdered boy, Wadea al-Fayoum, died of his wounds while his 32-year-old is in serious but stable condition. The child was stabbed 26 times with a military-style knife at his Plainfield home just before 11:40 a.m. on October 14th. The 71-year-old murderer, Joseph M. Kazuba, arrived at the family home and rang the doorbell. The mother opened the door. The attacker, who is the family's landlord, started to stab her violently, screaming, "You Muslims must die." The seriously injured mother ran inside to call 911. Kazuba, meanwhile, attacked the child with the knife, stabbing him 26 times. The 71-year-old is now charged with first-degree murder, attempt first-degree murder, and 2 counts of committing a hate crime. Joseph Kazuba is being held at Will County's adult detention facility. The victims are Palestinian. The murdered boy's father came forward to say the child had only 2 weeks earlier celebrated his 6th birthday. While America is a violent society and murders are rampant, this particular one is especially gruesome because the victim was an innocent 6-year-old child. This murder, however, did not occur in a vacuum or just random killing. Since the intensification of conflict in Palestine, the entire American establishment has gone into frenzy, vilifying and demonizing Palestinians. Joe Biden, the American president, has not only been screaming against Hamas, he has even told blatant lies about them. The most egregious lie has been that Hamas had beheaded 40 Israeli babies. He went so far as to claim that he had seen pictures of beheaded babies. When the Washington Post contacted the White House to share those pictures, the paper was told that the president had not seen any such pictures. Instead, he based his statement on what the Zionist regime prime minister had told him. Biden can now see the pictures of a 6-year-old Palestinian child stabbed 26 times by one of his own citizens. Will he condemn such barbarism against an innocent child, an American citizen, albeit of Palestinian origin, murdered in the United States? It is highly unlikely, much less his visiting the family in Chicago. After all, they are Palestinian. Other U.S. officials, including Senator Lindsey Graham, have issued blood-curdling threats against the Palestinians. The U.S. media, without exception, has joined this crusade, with every outlet trying to outbid others in who can utter the most outrageous profanities against the Palestinians. It is not surprising that racists and bigots like Kazuba would indulge in their criminal act. Muslim organizations had warned of just such a threat. The murder of an innocent Palestinian child is not only heartbreaking, but is the direct result of the hate-filled rhetoric of the likes of Biden, Graham, Nikki Haley, Antony Blinken, and other American politicians. While the Zionists in the occupied Palestine are blowing young children and babies to pieces with their American-supplied bombs, Americans in the U.S. are stabbing Palestinian children to death. Being a Muslim and Palestinian is now enough to be murdered in cold blood in the United States of America. 6-year-old Wadaa Al-Fayoum is the latest victim of this hatred, but he is not likely to be the last. American criminality knows no bounds. According to Arab News, the Muslim Civil Liberties Organization called the crime our worst nightmare and part of a disturbing spike in hate calls and emails since the outbreak of the operation in Palestinian territories. The group cited text messages exchanged among family members that showed the attacker had made disparaging remarks about Muslims. Ahmad Rahab, the group's executive director, said, "Palestinians basically again with their hearts broken over what's happening to their people have to also worry about the immediate safety of life and limb living here in the United States."
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The scenes out of the Gaza Strip are nothing short than a massacre. The hospital there is on its last breath, like the patients. Meanwhile, the Israeli military has ordered the evacuation of more than 1 million people from northern Gaza to, quote, temporarily move south to mitigate civilian harm. The UN has condemned this move, warning against devastating humanitarian consequences, warning that the evacuation was simply not possible.
Moving more than 1 million people across a densely populated war zone to a place with no food, water, or accommodation, when the entire territory is under siege, is extremely dangerous and in some cases simply not possible.
The Palestinian UN envoy had harsher words, urging the UN chief to stop Israel's crimes against humanity.
Stop this carnage of civilians.
Israel's UN ambassador, meanwhile, criticized the UN response to Israel's warning. The UN should be praising Israel for these precautionary actions, he said. For years, the UN has put its head in the sand in the face of Hamas's terror buildup in Gaza. This coming from a regime that has never heeded any UN resolutions, or international law for that matter, and has been called a child killer. The stats here speak for themselves.
More than 150,000 Palestinian civilians have been killed or injured in Gaza and the West Bank since 2008. 33,000 of those were children.
This is what Israel has in mind: the creation of two evacuation routes to the south of Barakah, which Israel has said will not be the target of Israeli attacks. Hamas has rejected that outright. There are fears that Israel is trying to bring people to the streets with the aim of creating gatherings and then taking casualties, something it has done in previous wars. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, it is reported that the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is negotiating with Persian Gulf Arab countries to convince them to accept the residents of the Gaza Strip. He has said that it is because the Israeli army is getting ready to raise Gaza to the ground. The expression "to raise to the ground" is one that Blinken used exactly. The plan is to transfer 1 million citizens to Egypt and then distribute them to Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates. What Israel has in mind is to prepare for a block-by-block warfare in Gaza. Israel has already stated that the goal is to destroy Hamas, disregarding the human costs, which may include the ones in captivity. And that includes Israeli soldiers' lives as well. The resistance fighters can use their tunnel network to get in behind the attack or to attack in all directions, to make it very difficult for Israel to effectively have an advantage. At the end, the U.S. and a U.S.-supported coalition will help Israel demolish the Gaza Strip, which the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has stated. The U.S. would do that through its aircraft carrier, the Gerald Ford, along with the U.K., who has sent surveillance aircraft. But not so fast. Hamas itself has plenty of firepower left in its arsenal, from drones to missiles and its fighters. And there are other players in this battle as well, who are willing and even more able to defeat the enemy forces. Hezbollah and a squadron of fighters, for one, who has said that it would act when deemed necessary. Israel's ultimate goal is a greater Israel. One needs to look at where the American forces are located, from the west of Iraq on the Euphrates border and east of the Euphrates of Syria. But if it comes down to that, there is one formidable force standing in their way: the Islamic Republic of Iran. The European Union has asked Elon Musk to censor information not conforming to the Western narrative over Israel's war of aggression against Palestinians in Gaza. The EU called on Musk, the billionaire owner of the social media website X, formerly known as Twitter, to curb the spread of what it called disinformation about Israel's aggression against Palestinians. In a letter to Musk shared on social media, EU industry chief Thierry Breton claimed that he had indications that X was purportedly being employed to disseminate what he called illegal content and disinformation in the European bloc. The criticism directed at X social media platform is part of a multi-front information war designed to control the narrative around anything surrounding the Palestinian issue and the latest anti-occupation operation. Palestinian support in the West is at an all-time high, despite Western leaders coming out in the open in defense of the Israeli regime and its relentless and indiscriminate aggression against Palestinians. In France, which prides itself for so-called freedom of expression, police attacked a pro-Palestine demonstration.
It's a shame that France is authorizing the protests in favor of Israel, but forbidding the protests for Palestine, arguing that they pose a security problem. They just can put some policemen and they will see that things will go well. We have the right to show solidarity with people who have been suffering oppression for a long time. This has to stop. Stop hypocrisy. Stop.
Western leaders and their media cronies have come out in unison to toe the same false narrative that the Hamas operation was unprovoked and that the Israeli regime is justified in attacking Palestinians. But they fail to mention the unbearable situation that Israel has created for Palestinians, both in Gaza and the occupied West Bank.
Also, this is just part of colonization. This is the last phase of European colonization. And notice that the countries that are most strongly in support of Israel are not just the United States. It's the United States, Australia, and Canada, the offshoots of England, Anglosphere sometimes called, unusual forms of imperialism. These are settler colonial societies.
The West and its media apparatuses have turned to their disinformation campaigns to muddy the line between fact and reality. Perhaps the most egregious claim came from the Zionist outlet I-24 News. It falsely claimed that 40 Israeli babies were killed and that some were decapitated. The claim has been proven categorically false by media outlets. The claim of Israeli babies being killed was spread with no proof or source. Yet the very real footage of martyred Palestinian babies being pulled from the Gaza rubble was largely ignored by Western leaders and their influence accounts.
I am incredibly angered that word of mouth, unverified reports of quote-unquote rape and decapitation, which obviously draw on Islamophobic tropes, have garnered more and more political and global outrage than those very images, than a video of a nurse announcing and screaming in distress that her husband has been killed in an Israeli airstrike. And, you know, the PR strategy of the Israeli regime throughout all of this has been to invoke those Islamophobic sentiments.
Western media apparatus and celebrity apparatus are intertwined, and they propagate the so-called standard narrative about the righteousness of Western Israeli axis and the inherent evil character of Muslims and Arabs. Any deviation, meaning support for Palestine, is met with categorically false claims of anti-Semitism, racism, or outlandish smear campaigns. Decades of aggression, occupation, land theft, systematic discrimination against Palestinians, and oppression have largely been ignored.
The Israeli government have brazenly, publicly, and openly declared their intention to commit a war crime and have commenced that war crime against the people of Gaza, saying that they intend to starve of food, electricity, water, 2.2 million people. That is a war crime under the Fourth Geneva Convention. They are raining down thousands of the most sophisticated missiles known to humanity onto the most densely populated area in the world. That almost every missile will incur civilian casualties, will and are destroying the infrastructure, the water infrastructure, the energy.
Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says Israel will receive a heavier slap for the regime's ongoing massacre of the Palestinian people in the besieged Gaza Strip. The leader emphasized that the Gaza massacre will bring a greater calamity to the Zionists after they suffered, quote, an irreparable failure both in terms of military and intelligence. Ayatollah Khamenei further described as a destructive quake the anti-Israel operation launched by Palestinians. He said those who blame the operation on non-Palestinians are making mistakes. The leader underlined that the damage inflicted on Israel in the surprise operation by Palestinians is the result of the regime's own actions. Ayatollah Khamenei said the brave move by Palestinians was a response to years of Israeli crimes. The leader said Israel is now playing the victim card and that Western media outlets are helping the regime in this regard. Ayatollah Khamenei noted that the regime cannot be portrayed as an oppressed entity while it is actually a monster. He warned Israel and its backers that the bloodshed of Palestinians will bring them greater calamity. The leader said the Israeli regime is playing the victim card in order to double down on its oppression and justify its attack on people's houses, attack on civilians, and its massacre and mass killing of Gazans. The ferocious bombardment of the Gaza Strip has left the besieged territory in ruins. The residents of Gaza are facing unimaginable suffering.
But my neighbors, they didn't evacuate as well. They have their windows down. Here are their windows. And here is the family. They're gathering all together, also in a place far away from the web. I was trying to explain things, but I think you can hear them now.
Aid groups say the damage to water, sanitation, and hygiene facilities have already disrupted services to more than 2.3 million people there. Israeli officials have cut water, electricity, and fuel supplies to the coastal enclave. Israel is squeezing Palestinians in Gaza further, extending an existing 16-year air, land, and sea blockade of the territory. Legal experts have been raising the question of whether Israel's actions could be considered a war crime by the International Criminal Court.
The humanitarian situation in Gaza was extremely dire before these hostilities. Now it will only deteriorate exponentially. Medical equipment, food, fuel, and other humanitarian supplies are desperately needed, along with access for humanitarian personnel. Relief and entry of essential supplies into Gaza must be facilitated, and the UN will continue efforts to provide aid to respond to these needs.
According to the UN, more than 187,000 of Gaza's 2.3 million people have left their homes. There are no bomb shelters in Gaza. Residents who have lost their homes have nowhere to turn except the 83 UNRWA schools across the territory. According to Palestinian health officials, Israeli strikes have targeted hospitals and medical crews. Hospitals are overcrowded with injured people.
Health facilities, patients, health workers, and civilians in general have to be protected and safeguarded, as Dr. Tedros has said over the week.
There is a shortage of drugs and medical supplies and a shortage of fuel for generators. The Palestinian Ministry of Health has called for a safe corridor to ensure the entry of urgent medical aid into Gaza's hospitals. The Red Crescent has delivered some medical aid to Gaza through the Rafah crossing, but the delivered aid is far from enough to alleviate the pains and sufferings of the people in Gaza. The Gaza power plant, now the only source of electricity, has run out of fuel. The loss of electricity will directly affect hospitals and the water supply.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. in the limelight.
In an interesting revelation, a recent report said that three high-profile Muslim anchors of the American news television channel MSNBC, owned by NBC Universal, have been sidelined. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, the Semaphore report said Mehdi Hassan, Ayman Mohyuddin and Ali Velshi have been quietly taken out of the anchor's chair amid the Zionist regime's no-holds-barred bombing of the besieged Gaza Strip. The network reportedly did not air the night episode of the Mehdi Hassan show on its streaming platform Peacock and also reversed its plan to replace Joe Raid with Mohyuddin for the channel's 7 p.m. show. The report, citing two network sources with knowledge of the plans, said Velshi will also be replaced by Alicia Menendez. Menendez hosts American Soys on Saturdays and Sundays. Hassan is a British-American television journalist of Indian descent who has anchored the popular The Mehdi Hassan Show on Peacock since October 2020 and on MSNBC since February 2021. Mohyuddin is an Egyptian-born New York-based journalist for NBC News and MSNBC who currently hosts the weekly primetime show Ayman on MSNBC. Velshi is a U.S.-based Canadian journalist who has been reporting for NBC News since October 2016 and also serves as a news host for MSNBC Channel. NBC has termed the schedule changes as coincidental, refuting claims that the high-profile Muslim broadcasters are being snubbed amid the cessation of the Zionist regime's hostilities against Palestinians. However, the Semaphore report stressed that staff members at MSNBC have been concerned by the moves, feeling all three hosts have some of the deepest knowledge of the conflict. It said the move to sideline the three anchors comes as the MSNBC network, which is aligned closely with the Democratic Party, has swung into intense solidarity with the Zionist regime. The report stated that shift has come with heated internal and external objections to anything that breaks with that solidarity and has come with social media criticism of Hassan, Mohyuddin and Velshi. Following the Hamas operation, U.S. politicians, including President Joe Biden, quickly jumped in defense of the occupying Zionist regime and peddled blatant lies about children beheaded and women raped. Interestingly, the three MSNBC journalists, including Hassan, have been vocal against the operation launched by the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas on the occupied territories last week. Hassan, who has a massive social media following and is known for his argumentative style of on-air debating, took to his X handle, formerly Twitter, on October 8, a day after Hamas operation, lecturing his 1.3 million followers on morality of the conflict. He wrote, "This conflict for me has always been about morality. Morally, you cannot justify the killing of Palestinian civilians even if you say it's fighting terrorism." Mohyuddin, much like his MSNBC colleague, has been very consciously trying to appease his employers by being soft on the Zionist regime apartheid and amplifying voices against the resistance. On October 8, a day after Hamas operation, he shared a series of posts on X that were circulated to vilify the Gaza-based resistance group and to portray the Zionist regime troops and settlers as victims. Welsh, like other two, has also used his social media platforms, including X, to make a case for himself as someone who despises the Palestinian resistance movement. All three of them, Hassan, Mohyuddin, and Welshi, despite trying to present themselves as good boys, have received a bad report card from their bosses. That's how much Americans value free speech. Meanwhile, RT reported BBC takes six reporters off air over pro-Palestine stance. The internal probe comes as the broadcaster faces domestic backlash for allegedly not showing enough support for Israel. Britain's state-funded broadcaster BBC has launched an investigation into six reporters and a freelance contributor working for its Arabic service for allegedly exhibiting anti-Israel bias and cheering attacks by the Palestinian group Hamas. RT added the probe is related to the journalist's social media activities, namely liking and reposting pro-Palestinian content and criticism of the Zionist regime. The online conduct of BBC employees is covered by BBC's impartiality rules. According to British media reports, the offensive posts, all of which have been taken down, included descriptions of Hamas as freedom fighters and the group's surprise attack on Israel as a morning of hope for Palestine. While the staff reporters have not been formally suspended as of yet, only put off air, the corporation has already parted ways with the freelance contributor, who had been working with the outlet since early October. Seven former culture secretaries, led by Sajid Javid, penned a letter to the corporation's direct general, Tim Davey, arguing the approach actually damages the BBC's impartiality. The BBC has also faced online backlash over using very specific language to describe victims of the ongoing escalation between the Zionist regime and Hamas, referring to Israeli victims as killed and Palestinian as those who died in massive retaliatory airstrikes. Another major British broadcaster, Sky News, has been caught using the same wording to describe the matter amid the escalation. Bazaar.
Wherever you go, you are surrounded by real estate, whether they are houses, offices, shops, hotels, or education, or even healthcare facilities. These buildings are all the products of Realty Development. Property is a multi-business. It can involve buying land and building on it, renovating or improving, or converting property from one use to another. All of which adds higher value to the area. Property developers quite literally build the world around us, creating and changing the environments we inhabit and use on our daily basis.
Hello again, and welcome to another edition of Bazaar, the weekly program that analyzes markets, profits, industries, and all sorts of things that connect us nationally and internationally. This week, we will take a look at Iran's housing and light construction industry. We want to uncover how this market is doing and what contributions it is making to living standards along with the economy. Time to light up today's Bazaar.
In order to become more familiar with the activities of light construction in Iran, we decided to visit a real estate developer in the capital city, Tehran. Nexa Group was established over a decade ago and is a known name in the construction industry. Essentially, it develops luxury properties for residential purposes. In a nutshell, a developer adds value to land or property. What sets this company apart from other developers is its choice of cream-of-the-crop architects who are highly creative, innovative, and experienced in the field of design. Clients who have land they wish to develop can seek the services of this contractor. This company then enters a contract with the owner and begins the process of vetting architects for designing its buildings. In recent years, several competitions have been held by this developer for residential projects. The winning design that meets the high standards of this company and its clients is awarded the project. But that's not all. This company also has a vast network of highly specialized subcontractors to take care of other aspects of construction, such as structure engineering, excavators, and so on. Among its many activities, this developer provides building management services. Such services include maintenance of plumbing, electrical, and mechanical installations of the building.
There are several different types of property development. Some are large-scale, meaning that several lots of land are being developed into a single plot. These types of developments can be subdivided and sold individually or as a whole. There are also developments for commercial and sports uses, such as shopping centers and stadiums. Ooh, I like the sound of this.
Projects at this company range from low to medium density residential buildings. This developer also pays particular attention to designing buildings that are environmentally friendly. Most of its buildings are constructed following green practices that also elevate the living standards and quality of experience of its end users. One of its most recent residential projects is called Phoenix. What is most unique about this building is that it was designed based on the traditional 9-square method of Iranian architecture. This green building incorporates the needs of people during the coronavirus pandemic, which includes spaces for working from home. Large investments are made in real estate development each day. But adding value to the property, such as luxury structures with numerous amenities, are what really drive profits. And this company is ready to work with foreign investors and export its services along these lines. One of the competitive advantages of this developer, relative to others in the country, are its innovative and exceptional designs that gain the attention of clients and customers. Its luxury developments are geared to entice customers with more accommodations, higher-end options that integrate an entire lifestyle, and an elevated culture of living. The quality of its work has increased competition in the domestic market, making its buildings a must-have among customers. This property developer also has a unique view of the US-imposed sanctions, which has helped the company thrive throughout the years.
Iran has a growing population of around 85 million people, and the majority of the population is still young. But as time goes by, this population will age as they start families. With this in mind, many of them are embarking on the journey of purchasing homes. And for this to become possible, more housing units need to be constructed to meet this growing need.
The Ministry of Roads and Urban Development estimates that the per capita of housing for each Iranian is around 200 square meters. This means that 17 billion square meters of buildable land is needed to house every Iranian. According to the Ministry of Roads and Urban Development, the annual demand for homes stands at 900,000 units. In more general terms, according to the Ministry of Housing, some 10 million units are currently needed. This is while the average annual production volume for homes is around 300,000 units. So around 1 million residential units need to be built each year to satisfy this demand. Figures from the Statistics Center of Iran show construction of housing increased by nearly 40% last year. Data from the Ministry of Roads and Urban Development show municipalities issue an average of 350,000 residential construction permits each year. Of this amount, roughly 70% lead to construction. However, experts say this is not nearly enough to meet annual housing demands. Last year, the housing construction market saw a slump in completing projects. This was mainly due to the jump in land prices and construction materials that deepened the housing recession. The Ministry of Roads and Urban Development says housing prices have increased by 200% over the last 5 years. This has increased the purchase parity, making some vulnerable groups unable to buy a home.
It might be interesting to know that this issue has gathered the attention of the government for some time now. The government has implemented initiatives to help people purchase homes. One of these initiatives was to increase the amount of bank loans for first home buyers. Several other plans are also underway, such as the vacant house tax plan, to increase the amount of available homes.
President Ibrahim Raisi has pledged to build 1 million residential units each year for the next 4 years. This scheme was presented to address and prevent a housing shortage in the country. The Building Contractors Association says planning, execution, and building material is available. It emphasized that with large investments and land allocation, this plan can easily go forward. But authorities contend that infrastructure such as electricity and water connectivity requires more planning. Government officials also say wrinkles in the financial model for this project still need to be ironed out. Iran is entirely self-sufficient when it comes to construction material, according to the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade. Steel, glass, and cement is produced in abundance in the country. In fact, the surplus of these items are exported to several countries around the world. Meanwhile, the light construction industry in Iran is booming amid a long housing recession. New spaces and innovative designs that incorporate the needs of people are being built. Homes are not just a place to live, they are increasingly being seen as a source of capital and a place to increase the quality of living standards. There is also a growing trend towards designing sustainable buildings that reduce emissions and negative environmental impacts. All these achievements make this industry a promising one with a bright future. It is said nearly 70% of the world's protein comes from animal sources. While the plant-based trend is popular for the time being, meat is here to stay. Protein is also a brain food, vital for neurological and other bodily functions. Moreover, globally, the relationship between humans and livestock is fascinating. It has transcended time and space. Yet, despite all the world's technological and scientific accomplishments, mankind has failed to replicate livestock's exact contributions to food, clothing, and even energy. Last time, we visited Khazai Agricultural and Livestock Breeding Complex and explored their agricultural and cultivation units. This time, we will look at their advanced animal husbandry divisions and what led them to livestock rearing. To begin with, it all starts from the soil. Over time, the ground needs constant enrichment for high-yield harvests. After this company shifted to knowledge-based potato cultivation, it realized the best way to prepare the farmlands for the next round of planting was to employ the help of sheep. This company has around 2,400 hectares of farmland, and fertilizing this much land becomes a mammoth task. So, it decided to bring in the heavyweights of the fertilizing sector and started its cattle breeding unit. And as a result, it also launched its animal feed production facility, where they scientifically formulate feed and test ingredients for the best quality. As the cows are allowed to roam the lands periodically and are fed high-quality food, the dairy and meat they produce are also very nutritious. They have thousands of Holstein cattle at their rearing unit, and the milk produced is rigorously tested.
Typically, livestock is fitted with digital tags. This is the animal's profile, which can be modified or added according to the animal's examination. They also serve as an identity card so caretakers can keep track of each animal's health and other features. This is also important information for veterinarians and the animal's products, which are further examined in advanced labs.
Each animal born or brought to the facility is given a digital tag after a lab examination. This company's advanced veterinary and genetic lab complex carries out essential functions. It's worth mentioning that one of its labs is mainly dedicated to testing cows and their milk. Here, milk is tested for its microbial load. This usually involves a standard plate count, which determines the total number of bacteria in a sample. These results are then used to determine the grade of milk. It might be interesting to know that this company has received numerous awards for being the best model cattle breeder in the province and the country. These titles were granted based on meeting nearly 40 standards of the Ministry of Agriculture. Such achievements were made possible by dozens of expert staff employed at this company. Its other laboratory is dedicated to raising sheep. At this facility, sheep are genetically selected for specific characteristics. They are also genetically bred to produce twins and sometimes triplets. This company has never stopped eyeing the future. It plans to expand its facilities further while incorporating new technology and applying the latest science to increase the quality of its products.
In 2019 was considered the golden period for red meat production in the country. Since then, production has grown each year, primarily because of the removal of an export ban. 3 years ago, Iran imported large amounts of meat to supply domestic needs, while domestic meat production was operating at full capacity. The ban was implemented to stabilize the market and support local production.
Iran's Livestock Exporters National Assembly estimates domestic needs for red meat at around 60 million heads of light livestock annually. Last year, this number was 72 million, which is well above average. This meant 12 million light livestock were ready for culling and exports. The Ministry of Agriculture puts red meat's domestic per capita consumption at over 12 kilograms, with lamb being the most popular red meat. This year, the National Statistical Center, or SCI, reported red meat production stood at nearly 51,000 tons in the month of May alone. Based on the SCI figures, over 1.3 million livestock holding farms are spread across the country. 54% of these farm small livestock and 26% are dedicated to large livestock husbandry. The remaining 20% farms both large and small livestock. The meat industry in Iran is worth some $2 billion. But not all livestock are raised for meat. They are also reared for their milk. Based on the SCI, Iran annually produces nearly 9 million tons of raw milk. 70% of this amount is produced on industrial farms, and the rest comes from traditional dairy farms. Going off of figures from Iran's Customs Administration, on average, roughly 800,000 tons of raw milk are exported annually, valued at around $800 million. All things considered, Iran's livestock industry is booming and is an excellent place for investors who will see quick returns
and profit.
Now it's that time of the show for me to step aside for several minutes because my good friend and colleague has another awesome field report lined up for you. Take it away.
The basis of the steel industry is iron ore. It's courtesy of this critical raw material that steel is all around us. In the beneficiation process, the gank minerals, or the mineral matter of no value that occurs with the metallic ore, is removed from the mineral substance and iron ore concentrate is produced. The concentrate is then shipped from mining plants as a bulk commodity by rail.
Hi again. The wagons carrying the iron ore concentrate have reached their destination. What happens at this stage is that through a gargantuan machine, they are overturned. This is called a wagon tippler. What it does is that it tips the wagons. It retains the wagons from the top and it overturns them. First, the wagons are detached from other wagons and then they're lifted over here. And look at those arms. Look at those arms, how gigantic they are. And now they're gonna retain the wagon, overturn it to empty its load into a container. From that container, the iron ore concentrate is going to be mixed. First, it's going to travel through some distance and it's going to be mixed with some additives to be fed into the pelletizing process.
In this week's feature program, we visited Chotormalu Industrial Facility located in the center of Iran, Yazd province. The iron ore concentrate must be pelletized for use in iron and steel making. In summary, pelletizing is achieved by combining the iron ore with water and a specific binder, which is then rolled up in a balling drum to produce relatively uniform pellets, which can then be easily handled in downstream processes.
And here we are. The powder is the iron ore concentrate now mixed with some additive. It is now fed into large discs. In this industrial complex, everything is just enormous. This is called the pelleting disc. It's really huge. Now what happens here is through the use of centrifugal force, the powder gets compressed and it's just pushed to the edges of this disc. And after the powder completes a couple rotations and as it grows in size, then it forms the pellets. And once it is just large enough, it will exit the rotation because of that centrifugal force and it moves over to the conveyor belt and it's now time for grading. Now, those particles that are just perfect in size and shape, they will move on to travel over to the kiln where the content moisture is removed and sintering takes place. So the iron pellet now gets hardened and after that, cooling takes place. Now, stay with us for more.
Chotormalu's pelletizing plant, with a production capacity of 3.4 million tons per year, employs 500 people directly and another 3,000 indirectly. The iron ore pellets will be transferred to stackers and are piled in an area which can store 300,000 tons of pellets.
Fe2O3, I don't know how familiar you are with chemistry and the chemical reactions and the periodic table, but anyway, at this stage of the process, Fe2O3 is going to be turned into Fe through a process that is called direct reduction of iron. And this process is done by three main stages. The first stage occurs above furnace. The pellets are poured into the furnace. And what happens inside the furnace is two gases are going to hit the pellets. The gases are carbon monoxide and molecular hydrogen. They're extracted from natural gas through a process that is called reformation. And two gases are going to hit the pellets, and through three chemical reactions, Fe2O3 is going to turn into Fe, which is called the reduced iron, or also sponge iron because of its high porosity. Now, this process can be done in two different ways. One is called hot direct reduction of iron, and the other one is called cold direct reduction of iron. Now, I'm going to move on to the next and the final stage, steel production.
Hot direct reduced iron, or HDRI, is DRI that is transported hot directly from the reduction furnace into an electric arc furnace, thereby saving energy. whereas cold DRI is the one that is cooled and stored before being charged to a furnace. Well, on the face of it, there is no reason for facilities to even consider cold DRI, but in reality, it's not really that simple. The development of mankind would have been impossible but for steel. It fueled the Industrial Revolution and remains the backbone of modern industrialized economies. The process continues with primary steelmaking, which is done by an electric arc furnace at Chodormalu, and then moves on to secondary steelmaking, which involves treating, continuous casting, and shaping.
The final product is made, the steel billet, and you can tell how hot it is in here. Well, the process here starts with the electric arc furnace. It melts the sponge iron that I talked about earlier. And what happens next is that we need some ladles. Ladles are containers. They're going to contain the molten material. Then the ladles are taken over some molds. Molds are going to carry the molten material. And as the molten material is carried over some distance, it solidifies into the final product, which is the steel billet. Now, this complex is really huge. Everything inside it is gigantic. And I've been with you from the very beginning of this process, the iron concentrate, to the very end.
Thanks for that educational adventure once again. Well, that covers our show for today. I have been Samson Sees. Sees you in the next bazaar.
IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Genocide in Gaza. Hundreds more Palestinians are killed after the Israeli military targets a hospital in the besieged enclave. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, deplores Israel's genocide in Gaza, saying the regime should be put on trial over his crimes.
The OIC meeting that occurred in Jeddah has issued some statements, of which one of them is to obviously condemn the brutal Israeli massacre that took place at that hospital in the besieged enclave.